Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Well, the election is in just 5 days, and if you have not yet voted, your best bet is to drop off your ballot in a drop box or vote in person. You can find out where to vote by visiting voteamerica.com. Over the past couple of days, we got three important Supreme Court decisions. On Monday, the Supreme Court ruled that absentee ballots returned after Election Day will not be counted. According to ABC, there are 320,000 outstanding absentee ballots in Wisconsin. In 2016, Donald Trump won Wisconsin by fewer than 23,000 votes. Yesterday, the Supreme Court let stand a lower court ruling that allowed North Carolina's Board of Elections to extend the ballot count deadline to 9 days after Election Day. And in Pennsylvania, the High Court refused to accept a case brought by Republicans to block a ruling from the state's highest court that allowed ballots to be counted for up to 3 days after the election. Justices Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch said the court may still consider the case after Election Day, and we'll find out what that means exactly. Justice Amy Coney Barrett did not take part in the North Carolina or Pennsylvania cases. And here's what else is happening. Yesterday, the Texas Supreme Court upheld Governor Greg Abbott's order limiting counties to just one ballot drop-off site. Harris and Travis counties are home to millions of voters. The good news is that people in Texas are voting in massive numbers. And then in Florida, of the nearly 4 million absentee ballots that have been returned in Florida, 21,000 have been flagged for signature problems. A federal judge is preventing South Carolina from discounting ballots solely based on signature issues, and state officials in Pennsylvania told counties they cannot throw out ballots because of signatures. It is very hard to keep up with all of this. It can be very confusing to people and also election officials. But despite Republican efforts to suppress the vote, the people are voting in massive numbers. A record 79 million people have already voted, and it is not stopping. Joining us with the latest is Ari Berman, senior reporter with Mother Jones, where he covers voting rights. Ari is author of the book, Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Hi, Ari. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Rose. Good to talk to you again. Thank you.
Great to talk to you, Ari. Last time I said the same thing. Despite these efforts to suppress the vote, the people are just saying, you know what? We're going to do whatever it takes to vote. I mean, the numbers are amazing.
They are. And I am becoming increasingly convinced that people are voting in many cases because of the suppression efforts that we're seeing, that Democrats and voters of color see the Republicans trying to undermine their voting rights, trying to throw their ballots out, trying to stop them from voting. And they are becoming more motivated to make sure that their votes are counted and to make sure that they vote early so that their votes can't be thrown out after the election. And I think that's a really hopeful story amidst a really negative backdrop, that Republicans have done and tried to do whatever they can to make it harder to vote, even in a pandemic. But Democrats are organizing and voters of color are organizing in major, major ways to make sure that doesn't happen. And the most important thing you can do is to vote early, because if your mail ballot is in early, it can't be thrown out as long as you follow the rules. And if you vote early in person, that takes a lot of stress off the system on Election Day. And so thus far, with some exceptions, the election is actually going a lot smoother than I predicted. And this record turnout is really heartening to hear.
Oh, that's great. So it's going smoother than you predicted. Why is that, do you think? Because these organizations really did a great job of getting the word out?
I think because people have just been motivated so much to be able to vote. And despite all of the suppression efforts, in fact, it's actually become a lot easier to vote this year in the sense that you have both a lot of mail voting options and a lot of in-person voting options. So if you live in a state like Georgia or a state like Florida or a state like North Carolina, you have long periods of early voting. There have been long lines, yes, but there still are many days of early voting. You also have the option to vote by mail, and people were voting by mail earlier than ever before. And so the fact that you had options, the fact that voters have options is a really positive thing. And then you had specific places like in Harris County, Texas, they took a lot of proactive steps to make it easier to vote, to counteract the voter suppression. So even though in Texas, the governor, Greg Abbott, said there could only be one early voting location, sorry, only one mail ballot drop-off location per county, meaning that there was only one place to drop your ballot off in Harris County, which has 2.4 million registered voters and is larger than the state of Rhode Island. Local election officials there opened 110 early voting sites. They tripled the number of early voting sites. They extended poll hours. Today in Harris County, Texas, polls are going to be open for 24 hours at some locations. They allowed people to do drive-through voting. So if you're afraid of getting COVID, you could just drop your ballot off doing drive-through. So in response to the suppression, some local election officials did some really creative things to make it as easy as possible for people to be able to cast a ballot. And that's helped lead to larger turnout.
We've seen massive voter turnout, but also 42 million of the 92 million mail ballots requested by voters have not been returned as of yesterday, according to the U.S. Elections Project. So 42 million people still have their absentee ballots at home. And you are saying, Ari, that if you're one of them, you really need to drop off your ballot instead of mailing it back.
Yes, that is my message to most voters. If you live in a state like California, where your ballot can be received 2 weeks after the election, as long as it's postmarked by election day, I think you're fine still voting by mail. But if you live in a state like Wisconsin, which has a deadline of election day, and 30 states have those deadlines, you absolutely need to drop your ballot off. And even in states that allow you to return your ballot after election day, like in Pennsylvania and in North Carolina, according to these court rulings, I would still do everything I can to get my ballot in by election day, because Republicans are going to try to challenge those late arriving votes. Donald Trump is going to try to create uncertainty and weaponize longer vote counts. So the more that people can do to try to get their ballot in by election day or vote in person, the higher the chances that vote is counted and the lower the likelihood that Trump can try to weaponize uncertainty over vote counting and try to litigate to throw out ballots. So basically, unless you live in a state that has a long deadline after election day to receive ballots, I would absolutely urge people to drop off their ballots in person. And you can do that at drop boxes in many states, or you can go to your local county board of elections and drop it off. Or in some cases, you can do it at the polls.
And be sure to follow all of the instructions around envelopes and signatures. Are there any other messages you want to get out around those issues?
Yeah, if people vote by mail, they have to be careful about how to do it. They have to sign their ballot carefully. They have to make sure they put it in the right envelope, all of those things. And if people are concerned about mail voting, they should take advantage of in-person voting. Most states are going to still allow early voting in these last few days. Some states might end it tomorrow. Some states might end it over the weekend. Some states might have it all the way up through Election Day. But you should know that early voting is an option in 40 states. And if you can't do early voting, obviously Election Day is an option. And I think the fact that so many people have already voted early is going to make Election Day a smoother process. Also, most states open many more polling sites for Election Day than they do for early voting. So even though we've seen long lines during early voting, I am hopeful that we will not see long lines or as long of lines on Election Day, because there will be so many polling places open and fewer voters will need to vote on Election Day. So I am relatively hopeful about how this process is going to play out in terms of voting, but there are still some major warning signs. And one of those major warning signs is that there's so many outstanding mail ballots still.
Right. And we're going to speak with someone later in the show who's on the ground in Pennsylvania. But I wanted to ask you about these secrecy envelopes, Ari. NPR had a really good piece about this in early October. Pennsylvania sends out an extra, quote, secrecy envelope with all of its mail ballots. And the court has decided that if voters forget to include that envelope when they return their ballot, their ballots will be automatically void.
Yeah, that's a really disturbing provision. There's luckily been a lot of voter education around this. So I'm hoping we will not see the large numbers of disenfranchisement because of these secrecy envelopes, that people will understand the process. But I am concerned that some people might fall through the cracks. And that, again, gets to my point of, if you're concerned about mail voting, if you don't believe that you're going to follow the rules, or you don't know what the rules are, or you're worried about how to mail your ballot back or drop it off, you should go vote in person. Because in-person voting, while difficult sometimes in a pandemic, poll workers are there to help you. Whereas if you vote by mail, there isn't that same level of help. And so I think millions and millions and millions of Americans are going to be able to navigate mail voting successfully. We already saw that during the primaries. 99% of mail votes were counted in most states. But at the same time, you still have an option to vote in person, whether early or on election day. And that remains an alternative to mail voting for people that don't trust or are uncomfortable with the mail voting process.
Can you give us any updates on ballots that have been thrown out because of signature issues? And are you hearing about successful efforts to contact voters to let them know about the problems, and then that allows them to vote again?
Yeah, I am hearing successful efforts. In North Carolina, for example, there was a high rate of rejection, and that's been steadily going down. There are efforts to be able to, quote unquote, cure your ballot in many states. The states that I'm most concerned about, though, are the three most important states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, where they are not going to open those mail ballots until the day before the election in Michigan and on election day in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. So we have no idea if those ballots are going to be rejected or what the problems are with those ballots until the day before the election or on election day. And then there's going to be this crazy scramble to try to fix any problems that people might have with those ballots in a very short period of time. Usually you have about a week or so to be able to fix any problems with your ballots. And it's important to remember, it was the Republican state legislatures in these three states, in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, that did not give election officials more time to count ballots. They could have done what Florida allows, what North Carolina allows, what Arizona allows, which is when you get your ballots, you can start opening them. But they are determined to create chaos on election day and after. They are determined to allow Donald Trump to seize on this uncertainty and say, why is it taking so long to count the ballots? Why don't we have a winner on election night or right afterwards? And it's precisely that situation that Republicans in those states could have prevented, but they chose not to. And that's going to make it much harder for voters in those states. So I'm still really concerned, Rose, about the things we don't know in terms of all of those ballots not being opened until election day.
Today, we're speaking with Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. If you have any questions for Ari about what we are seeing across the country, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Ari, I would love to get your take about Justice Kavanaugh's opinion in the Wisconsin case, because this is getting so much attention. So on Monday, the Supreme Court ruled that absentee ballots returned after Election Day will not be counted. And so many writers who focus on voting issues are very concerned about Kavanaugh's opinion and what this could mean if there is a post-election dispute. Can you first tell us, you know, what was your response when you read Kavanaugh's opinion?
I was very, very concerned by what Brett Kavanaugh said. I wasn't surprised that the Supreme Court upheld the Election Day deadline for Wisconsin. I was expecting that. But I was very alarmed by the things that Brett Kavanaugh wrote in his opinion. First off, he cited Bush versus Gore, which always raises a red flag. And specifically because in Bush versus Gore in 2000, the Supreme Court specifically said, don't cite this case as precedent. This is a one-time only thing. But nonetheless, Brett Kavanaugh did cite it as precedent, which is very concerning. Not only that, Brett Kavanaugh is one of three justices on the court, along with John Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett now, who worked on the Florida 2000 recount for George W. Bush. So they already have a track record of trying to only count Republican votes in closely contested elections. Then there was another section of Brett Kavanaugh's opinion where he said that if ballots are counted after November 3rd, that could lead to, quote, suspicions of impropriety, which is just absolutely false. Every single state counts ballots after election day. That's how the process works. There is no official winner of the election on November 3rd. Those are just preliminary totals in every state. Secondly, 18 states under state law allow you to count ballots and for ballots to be received after election day. So like in California, where your ballot can be postmarked by election day but can be received after, those ballots are legal in those states. And so it seemed like Brett Kavanaugh was spreading the same kind of disinformation as Donald Trump when it came to saying there's something suspicious or nefarious about quote unquote late arriving ballots. And Justice Kagan replied to it in her dissent that these are not votes that are going to be flipped. These are just votes. They're no different than votes that arrive before election day, according to all of these different state laws. And so it honestly felt like I was reading a Breitbart column, or I was reading a Trump campaign brief, as opposed to reading an opinion by a justice from the Supreme Court, not to mention that he got a lot of factual errors wrong as well. He said, for example, that Vermont had not changed their election laws in response to COVID, when in fact, Vermont decided to send a ballot to every registered voter to make it as easy as possible to vote. I mean, that's a thing that you could check on Google in about 2 seconds. And for one of nine justices to make such a sloppy remark is really concerning. And the last thing I'll say about this is Kavanaugh, according to some people, is now the new swing justice on the Supreme Court because John Roberts is no longer the deciding vote. And so for the swing justice on the court to be saying these things, very, very concerning for voting rights.
Wow. What does his opinion, what could it mean if there is a post-election dispute? And can you lay out some post-election dispute scenarios for us?
Well, I think the most likely post-election dispute is going to come from Pennsylvania, and it's going to concern what to do about these ballots that arrive up to 3 days after election day. Because even though the Supreme Court decided to decline to overrule the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision, Samuel Alito in his dissent basically said, you guys are going to get another bite at the apple here. The Republican Party should challenge these votes after the election, and we're going to take another look at this. So if ballots in Pennsylvania arrive and are legal under state law, and they arrive the Wednesday after the election or the Thursday after the election or the Friday after the election, they could still be thrown out by the Supreme Court, which is a really, really confusing thing for voters to think, well, I'm doing something that's actually legal, but then it could be thrown out as illegal. I mean, that is a really crazy situation that the Supreme Court has put voters in terms of uncertainty. And so I think that's the most likely place that there could be a dispute. And what Kavanaugh and others are saying is that they believe that the state legislatures in these states, which are all Republicans, trump the state Supreme Courts and the state courts. And in at least two states, in Pennsylvania and North Carolina, there are much more progressive state courts and much more conservative state legislatures. So if there's a dispute between the state courts and the state legislatures, the Supreme Court is basically saying they are prepared to weigh in on the side of these state legislatures. So if the election is close, if this is litigated, I'm very concerned about what the Supreme Court might do, particularly if Amy Coney Barrett does not recuse herself, as many legal scholars believe she should.
What do you think is the significance of the fact that Kavanaugh, Roberts, and Barrett all worked on the Florida 2000 recount?
It shows you that they all have a track record in bare-knuckled Republican politics. They all have a track record in making sure that only Republican votes are counted. And in fact, some of them in 2000 took diametrically opposite positions that they're taking now. Brett Kavanaugh took the position, for example, in Florida 2000, that military ballots should be counted if they arrived after Election Day, the very thing that he's now casting aspersions on right now. Amy Coney Barrett in the Florida 2000 recount argued that Republican ballots that were cast by mail should be counted, even though in Florida, Republican officials actually altered absentee ballot request forms so that Republican voters could get their ballots, which is the exact kind of thing that the Trump campaign would try to litigate against today. And so it goes to show me that these justices have a background as political operatives, that sometimes they still sound like political operatives on the bench. Certainly Brett Kavanaugh did in his Wisconsin opinion. And it makes me really worried that we could see a Bush v. Gore 2.0 scenario. I think the Chief Justice, John Roberts, wants to avoid that kind of scenario because he cares, at least to some extent, about the legitimacy of the court. But I don't think that Kavanaugh and Barrett and others have that concern. I think their overriding concern is that they want Republicans to win elections, and they want them to be able to appoint more conservative judges and justices. And so I really worry about the integrity of the Supreme Court, particularly when Amy Coney Barrett was just put on the court 8 days before the election, when at that point in time, 65 million people have voted, and now it's up to almost 80 million.
Ari, when you step back and look at all of these cases and all of the confusion, I mean, the message it sends is that Republicans feel like they cannot win unless they disenfranchise voters. And they believe that there are more Democratic voters than Republican voters, because these decisions also affect Republican voters.
Yes. And I think there could be some real collateral damage here among Republicans, that many, many Republicans voted by mail for a long time in states like Florida and Arizona. And so it's possible that Trump is depressing his own turnout. It's also possible that he's forcing people to vote in person as COVID is spiking all across the country. But it's really telling that Trump has never had the support of a majority of Americans. He lost the popular vote by nearly 3 million. He's never had majority support in the polls. He's not at 50% in any kind of polls. And so in any kind of fair election in which a majority of Americans would pick the winner, he would lose. And so his entire strategy now is predicated on depressing turnout, on trying to prevent certain people from voting, on throwing out ballots. It didn't start with Trump. The Republican Party has been doing this for quite some time. You could go back a long way in history, or you could go back to things like Florida 2000, or you could go back to the fact that since the 2010 election, half the states in the country have made it harder to vote. But Trump has dramatically accelerated this strategy, and he's been so open about it. Republicans for many years tried to mask what they were doing. They tried to talk about things like voter fraud to confuse the issue. But Trump has just kind of come out right and said, I don't want people to vote. I don't want ballots to be counted. I don't want the post office to function so that people can vote by mail. The fact that Trump has been so explicit about this, I believe, is going to lead to a major backlash, because by saying the quiet part out loud so many times, people got the message that this is what the president wants to do, and we're not going to allow him to steal the election.
What else stands out for you? We're also going to be joined by someone in Pennsylvania in the second part of the show. So let's talk about North Carolina. The Supreme Court let stand a lower court ruling that allowed North Carolina's Board of Elections to extend the ballot count deadline to 9 days after Election Day.
Yeah. So, I mean, North Carolina is, again, another state where there could be disputes over this. It's still possible they could challenge ballots that arrive after Election Day, even though that was signed off not just by the courts, but by the State Board of Elections. North Carolina has a history of being very, very close. I think President Obama won it by somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 votes, and I expect it to be tied again. And there has been major issues with ballots being rejected. African-American voters were four times more likely to have their ballots rejected by mail than white voters. But I'm also heartened that we've seen major turnout in North Carolina. We've seen huge increases in turnout among younger voters, among Asian American voters, among Latino voters, among African American voters. And so just like in other parts of the country, turnout is way up in North Carolina. And despite some significant problems, I think the election by and large is going pretty well. And again, the fact that we are talking about North Carolina as a potential swing state just goes to show you how many different avenues Joe Biden has for victory, because North Carolina is not a must-win state for him, but it's absolutely a must-win state for Donald Trump. And North Carolina is one of those states that could announce its election results earlier. So if Biden is up in Florida or up in North Carolina or up in Arizona, we might not have to wait biting our nails for Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin to know what's going to happen.
Or who knows what's going to happen in Texas? I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of people say, I'm not sure it can turn blue this year, but wow, voter turnout in Texas, especially among young voters, is really incredible to see.
Through the roof. I think Texas has already surpassed its 2016 total turnout in early voting, which is astonishing. And it's not just the presidential race. Texas has a competitive Senate race, and even more important, they Democrats could flip the state House of Representatives, which they haven't controlled since 2003, and that would allow them to reverse some of the policies that Republicans have put in place for so many years, like the extreme gerrymandering that sends many more Republicans than Democrats to Congress. And so there's a lot of competitive races now, and even though I don't like the Electoral College, and I wish we had a system in which everyone's vote counted equally, the fact that we're talking about Texas and Georgia and North Carolina and Arizona, the fact that we're talking about a dozen states instead of maybe three or four states is making me a little bit more hopeful about the process, and I do think is spurring higher turnouts in all of those places.
And finally, Ari, and this is a conversation that we're definitely going to have after the election, but where do we go from here? Because I mean, these cases just make your head spin. I just don't remember this happening in any other election. It's hard for election officials. It's hard for average people to keep up with this. And, you know, we always want the voting turnout to be higher than it is. Right. Last time it was about 60%. And it's very hard to vote in certain states. Where do we go from here to ensure that this doesn't happen in the next election?
We need to make it dramatically easier to vote, and we need some real federal standards for voting rights so that voting rights can be protected. So there is legislation in Congress, H.R. 1, the For the People Act, that would do things like automatic voter registration in every state and early voting in every state and the automatic restoration of voting rights to people with past felony convictions. We need those kind of laws. We need the Congress to step up and restore the Voting Rights Act so that there's not 11-hour lines in Georgia or Texas can't decide to close mail drop-off locations across the state. We desperately need to upgrade our democracy. COVID has shown the inequities in all parts of society. And it's particularly shown the inequities when it comes to our voting system, that we do not have a 21st century voting system. We have huge disparities in terms of how people vote. We have huge disparities in terms of what the laws are in different states. And if there's record turnout, it will be in spite of the barriers that people face, not because those barriers didn't exist.
And the fact of the matter is, the only way to get there is if Biden wins and the Democrats keep the House and take back the Senate and then write these laws so they don't end up in the Supreme Court.
Yes, to take back power and to do whatever they can to make it easier to vote and hope that a 6-3 court doesn't get involved, or in fact, maybe one of their first priorities should be changing the courts themselves so that a court doesn't strike down anything they try to do, whether it's on voting or any other issue.
Ari Berman is senior reporter with Mother Jones and author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Ari, thanks again for all of your great work, and thank you for joining us.
Great to talk to you again, Rose. Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a quick break, we will go to Philadelphia and Wisconsin to find out how they are informing citizens about the latest Supreme Court rulings. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it is our media roundtable. We will discuss the Republican Party's history of gerrymandering and voter suppression. We'll get the latest on record turnout in Texas and find out why COVID cases and hospitalizations are rising in El Paso, which now has a 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. And if you have any show ideas or guest ideas as we head into Election Day, it's almost here, 5 days left, you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Now we are going to check in with Philadelphia and Wisconsin. Will Gonzalez is executive director of SEBA, a nonprofit in Philadelphia that promotes the economic development of the Latino community. Will has over 35 years of experience working in the Latino community and has received a number of awards for his community work. Hi, Will. Thank you for joining us again. Welcome back.
Buenos dias. Thank you.
We're also joined by Jay Heck. Jay has been executive director of Common Cause in Wisconsin for the past 22 years. Before that, he spent 8 years as a top advisor and legislative strategist for the Wisconsin State Senate Majority Leader. Hi, Jay. Thank you so much for joining us. Jay, are you with us? Oh, Jay's not there yet. Will, I want to start off with you then. Talk a little bit about how you're getting the word out to voters in Pennsylvania, because we're just learning that ballots luckily will be counted in Pennsylvania for up to 3 days after the election. So how are you all getting the word out?
Air, land, and sea, and always possible, from, you know, direct mailings to calls to texts to caravans. We're seeing the Latino community have some old fashioned caravans of cars. Some are partisan, some are nonpartisan, which is tough to do, but in all ways possible. And obviously, as Pennsylvania is an important state in this election, the airwaves are saturated. The advertising when you go online is saturated. I'm concerned about fatigue because we're getting 3, 4, 5 texts a day. We're getting calls, et cetera, et cetera. But that hasn't dampened the enthusiasm. I think now the important thing is messaging around the process. Today, the Secretary of State said it's too late to put your ballot in the U.S. mail. Please use the drop-off location.
Right. In fact, that's pretty much the message that we're sending across the country, even though ballots will be counted in places like California for 2 weeks after they receive it, as long as it's stamped by Election Day. I mean, you just never know, because we are having major problems with the USPS, according to a number of media outlets that have done tests. And if you want to find out where to vote, visit VoteAmerica.com. With all eyes on Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Will, I mean, this must be a wild time for all of you. Not only are you completely inundated by texts and mailers, but, you know, the country's really watching states like Pennsylvania. What are the main differences between 2016 and 2020? What stands out for you?
I think it's the volume, and I think it's the seriousness. I think some people thought that the race had been predetermined in 2016 based on statements made by the president, by Trump, who was doing an unconventional campaign and in a way that focused on offending as many people as possible rather than trying to unify people. And I think everybody thought that, hey, there's no way that the polls are going to be wrong. And the Democratic candidate lost the election by only 44,000 votes in Pennsylvania, which translates to roughly about four votes per voting precinct. Mm-hmm. And so that was shocking to the folks here. And a lot of people are vowing to not let that happen again, in the sense of not making their vote count.
I also wanted to ask you how you're getting the word out about these secret envelopes. I didn't even know this existed, but thanks to NPR for this really good piece they ran earlier this month. There are these, they're called secrecy envelopes, and the court has decided in Pennsylvania that if voters forget to include that envelope when they return their ballots, their votes will be automatically void.
Yes, that is nothing new in terms of the use of the envelope. I like to call it a privacy envelope. You know, you want to make sure that as the your ballot is being processed at the facility, that the anonymity and the secrecy of your vote is protected. And so you can have some person open your ballot and then put it on the side. And when you open then that privacy envelope, nobody knows that it was Will Gonzalez's ballot. We know when you record that I did vote, but you don't want it to be recorded for reasons of privacy and secrecy. Oh, he voted for this person for dog catcher and that person for something else. And so I think the mechanics of it could be confusing for some people who have never voted absentee or remotely. And I think there's been a lot of great resources. We produced 2 90-second videos, one in English and one in Spanish, about the process. And then we've seen a lot of, from animation to other things, and we've seen some very creative advertising around it. So I think people are finally getting it. As you know, it's also called a naked ballot. So there's been a lot of play on words on that. And as you know, human beings, like, whenever the word naked is presented, they like to listen.
That is Will Gonzalez. He's executive director of SABA, a nonprofit organization in Philadelphia that promotes the economic development of the Latino community. Donald Trump won Pennsylvania in 2016 by only 44,000 votes. And now I'd like to welcome Jay Heck to the show. Jay has been the executive director of Common Cause in Wisconsin for the past 22 years. Trump won Wisconsin by almost 23,000 votes. Hi, Jay. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning from Madison, Wisconsin. Great to be with you. Thanks.
Well, it's great to have you, Jay. How are you all getting the word out about this Supreme Court decision? ruling on Monday saying that absentee ballots will not be counted if they are received after Election Day.
Well, you know, this is a decision that was not completely unexpected in the sense that the courts have not been kind to voters in Wisconsin really over the last year. As you may recall, Wisconsin was the only state in the country that did not postpone its primary spring election last April because of the pandemic. Every other state in the country at least postponed it. It didn't happen here because there was a calculated decision made by partisan political leaders that holding the election in April during the pandemic would benefit a conservative who was running for re-election for the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we have Supreme Court elections in the spring. But the election was held, and the Supreme Court of the United States at that time said that any absentee ballot that was received for 6 days after the primary election, provided that it was postmarked by April 7th, would be counted. So we didn't have the results of the April primary in Wisconsin until 6 days after the primary. But that was not necessarily going to be the case in the fall. And sure enough, the federal court, the United States Supreme Court, and then the U.S. Court of Appeals in Chicago right before that said that, no, they were not going to extend that absentee ballot extension for 6 days in Wisconsin. And so what it means is that anything that comes into election clerks beyond 8 o'clock on November 3rd will not be counted. And that's going to be significant because 80,000 ballots came in after April 7th and were counted for the primary election. You can imagine that in the general election, that number will be many, many more. The difference is that a lot more people, I think, applied earlier for absentee ballots and have gotten them in. In fact, almost half of the ballots that we expect that will be cast in Wisconsin for the November election are already received by absentee, by clerks. But there's no question there will be great disenfranchisement on November 3rd here in the state.
According to ABC, there are 320,000 outstanding absentee ballots in Wisconsin. And as I said, Trump won by fewer than 23,000 votes. I saw a few PSAs this morning that are running. What else are organizations doing to let people know to drop off their ballot in person rather than mail it?
Yeah, it's very critical because since they have to be received at the polling place by Election Day, or it's even more complicated than that. In the city of Milwaukee, you cannot drop your absentee ballot off at your polling place. It has to go to a central clearinghouse in Milwaukee, which is then distributed by that central location. So that's going to cause confusion. But the thing that we're doing, obviously, are things like making sure that people do not depend on the mail at this late date, that they drop off their ballot at one of the secure ballot drop off boxes that are located in cities and towns across Wisconsin. And that finally, if that's not possible, that they return their absentee ballot to the polling place at an early voting site, which will last until Sunday, or to the polling place itself, unless, of course, it's in the city of Milwaukee. And the thing that it's important to note is this is happening right in the midst of the most severe spike in the coronavirus in Wisconsin. We are now number three in the country in terms of the infection rate for corona, and ninth in the death rate. So, you know, this couldn't be coming at a more critical time that the United States Supreme Court and other federal courts are issuing these decisions that really are not friendly for people in a situation like this.
Yeah, I mean, we're so sorry to hear that. According to a New York Times analysis, Wisconsin cities made up 7 out of 10 areas with the highest share of COVID cases. What are you hearing from voters about how this is affecting their ability to vote and be sure to get their ballot in on time?
Well, here's the deal, as one candidate often says, about what's happening in Wisconsin with regard to that. You know, unfortunately, there's no mandatory requirement that people have to wear a mask if they go to a polling place. There are many election officials at various municipalities that are trying to supply masks and obviously PPE for people that come to polling places. And then there's even some places where they will try to physically not only distance, but separate people that are not wearing masks from those that are at in-person polling places. But nevertheless, it's going to be a problem because we have obviously not a mask mandate, and the Republican-controlled legislature here has even gone to court to make sure that people don't have to wear masks. It's one of the reasons why we have such a huge infection rate in this state. And of course, I don't have to tell you, you know this, President Trump and Vice President Pence are continuing to come to Wisconsin to events which they let people in and masks are not required. And so that just sort of creates even greater confusion on the part of a lot of people about whether masks are even necessary.
I mean, that has just been really shocking to see, that even after they got COVID, in Trump's case and Pence's inner circle, they're still doing these major rallies. And some of the people behind Trump are wearing masks, but most everyone else is not. And there's no physical distancing at all.
No, there's no physical distancing. And the other thing that's, the other thing that's really disturbing is the fact that there is this great movement on the part of primarily conservatives saying that, you know, we shouldn't be forced to wear masks. And when the governor, Governor Tony Evers, who is a Democrat, attempted to mandate that masks be worn in public areas, the conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court struck down that mandate, and the Wisconsin legislature has refused to even come into session since last March to do anything with regard to mitigating the circumstances with regard to corona. So again, this is happening at absolutely the worst time. And, you know, the other thing, to sound like this is all terrible, but it really is. It's really more difficult now to vote in Wisconsin by almost any way than it was even last April as a result of a number of federal court decisions. A decision last at the end of June restricted the amount of time that people can vote in person. It was as many as 4 weeks in places like Madison and Wisconsin where people could go to in-person voting places to vote. And it was restricted to 2 weeks uniformly around the state because conservatives and Republicans said it wasn't fair that big cities like Madison and Milwaukee had more time to early vote where smaller rural areas didn't have the personnel to be able to do that. Of course, what they forgot to talk about was the fact that so many more people live in big cities and you need to have the ability to be able to spread out people over a longer period of time if they're going to be voting in person. So there's lots of things that have happened in this state that have been challenging for voters. And yet, nevertheless, the turnout with regard to absentee voting and even in-person early voting is phenomenal. And I think probably, and I don't think Wisconsin's unique, we're likely to have a record turnout for a presidential election in this state, even though we have the most extreme and restrictive voter photo ID law in the country in place in this state.
Wow. Jay Heck has been executive director of Common Cause in Wisconsin for the past 22 years. Last week, we did a show about a new Frontline documentary called Whose Vote Counts, and they specifically focused on Milwaukee, Wisconsin during the primary, and they looked at the incredible effort to get people to sign up for absentee ballots, and more than 1.3 million requested an absentee ballot. We're also joined by Will Gonzalez, executive director of SABA, a nonprofit in Philadelphia promoting the economic development of the Latino community. Will, Jay was talking about Trump coming to Wisconsin and having these massive maskless events. The same thing is happening in Pennsylvania. I just heard on MSNBC that Trump will be there all weekend. What are people saying about the fact that he's bringing people together who are not wearing masks and not distancing?
Well, it really depends on the people. I'm sorry, I'm hearing background. It depends really on the people who, their point of view. Hold on.
Is that on our end?
No, I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from.
Is it
I
now?
Apologize.
No, that's all right.
It depends on somebody's point of view. And we see the polarization of the politics, and we see the polarization of the concept of what is the pandemic and the public health emergency, and what are the ways to mitigate it and address it. And that's sad that a public health emergency has been politicized. Mm-hmm. Not only are we having the president come to Pennsylvania, but we're also having the vice president and even the first lady. And so that is continuing. Together with going through the resurgence and the growth of the public health emergency in Philadelphia, we've had also a crisis where we had a gentleman who was shot by the police. Mm-hmm. And that has created some disturbances, Walter Wallace Jr. And that's created some disturbances in Philadelphia, where now we have the National Guard. It's been a little crazy here. 2020 has been a special year.
Right. Yeah, I know. I've been following that case because the family said that he had a mental illness.
Yes. Yes. It's the challenge of law enforcement. It's one of the issues. It's one of the issues that is being presented in some of the advertising politically to try to draw a wedge. We see that in a very competitive race in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where there's a possibility that a Republican congressman could be unseated by a Democratic challenger. And they're using that wedge of that the challenger, that she supposedly supports the funding of the police, which is trying to bring down into very simple cartoon-like sentences what the whole important discussion about accountability and public safety is. And so it's kind of sad, but it's election season. We expect some people to start throwing the kitchen sink in the next few days. And so I think another important thing that we're monitoring is misinformation and disinformation and attempts to try to disturb polling places. And so helping people know how to de-escalate situations, helping people how to address situations of interference. But on the misinformation and disinformation, it's really important because that's what stews the pot. That's what helps people's anger rise or defeats people in the sense of they give them confusing information of where to vote or when to vote. And so we need to make sure that we provide accurate information, that we encourage people to go to trusted messengers, and that people get the right to exercise their vote in a timely way.
And Will, as we said earlier in the show, in Pennsylvania, the Supreme Court refused to accept a case brought by Republicans to block a ruling from the state's highest court that allowed ballots to be counted for up to 3 days after the election. Justices Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch said the court may still consider the case after Election Day. How are you all preparing for that?
Well, you know, that's interesting because what that does is it adds another layer of process to the highly stressed process of voting. Now they have to take all those ballots, set them aside, and there's a possibility, as you mentioned, that this could then be decided whether to accept those ballots through litigation, through the courts. So it's going to be very, you know, interesting to see if they come into play. I think what we're doing is using that as a motivating factor to say, please drop off your ballot at the official county location. Don't send it in the mail. And there's another reason why you need to vote. I think the other thing that's important in Pennsylvania is if you receive your mail-in ballot and you change your mind and you want to go vote in person, the process, and which is helping people understand that process, People need to go with that mail-in ballot and hand it in as they go and vote in person. And so we got to be telling people, you know, don't stand in line for 2 hours and then, hey, I forgot the ballot at home. Or don't leave the ballot laying around where the dog gets it or something else. Nothing against dogs. But, you know, it's just we need to continue helping people understand the processes so that no one stumbles over them. I think the key thing, and hopefully we'll get there, is after this election, further simplify the processes. So it's just a process of information.
Yeah, exactly. And Jay, we have about a minute left. How are you all preparing in Wisconsin for any election night issues?
Well, you know, this comes in the aftermath of the terrible violence that occurred in Kenosha in August, where actually a white supremacist from Illinois came up and killed two demonstrators in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And so there is fear, and there is certainly a lot of people watching out for possible interference at polling places, particularly in southeastern Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, those areas where the population of people of color tends to be most concentrated. So we're watching. We have a cohort of election attorneys as well as individuals that will be monitoring polling places. The Attorney General of Wisconsin has said in no uncertain terms that any attempt to brandish a weapon at a polling place or to try to intimidate or harass someone who's trying to vote will be met with police enforcement, including jail time, and that he is urging that if election inspectors at polling places cannot handle that 911 be called and police be brought in to make sure the voting process goes smoothly. So we're hoping that won't happen, but we're certainly preparing for it. And certainly I would just add this, that in the backdrop of the pandemic and the backdrop of everything else that's happening, it does seem to me, though, that people are going to find a way to get to vote. Certainly in Wisconsin, and I think in many other places. And again, I'm anticipating an unprecedented turnout despite the many, many impediments that have been put up and have been made voting for people in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country so difficult.
Right. Yeah, the turnout has been incredible to see. Jay Heck is Executive Director of Common Cause in Wisconsin. He's been there for 22 years. Thank you for joining us, Jay.
Thank you so much.
Will Gonzalez is Executive Director of SEBA, a nonprofit in Philadelphia promoting the economic development of the Latino community. Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Gracias. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show and Kevin Vance and Damian Miner for keeping our studio running. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.